All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Wednesday, March 28th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis. Wonderful time of the year, my friend.
I can't believe we're here, buddy. It feels like just yesterday we were lamenting the end of the baseball season as we headed into the World Series.
The snow is melting down. People are playing baseball in places where they shouldn't be. It's time.
Now we're back with the baseball season. Baseball is always exciting when we kick off. It's a new season, 162 games. You know, we make jokes sometimes about how the baseball season is it can be at times a labor of love and times like it has great payoffs. We started our fantasy projection model with baseball. This is where we originally started after, our roots come, you know, our business started around basketball season, but our roots definitely in like wanting to get into this space come from our days when we would just spent hours and hours working on our score sheet baseball simulator team with no real discernible payoffs except that we paid money to be in the league.
and to get cheated by people who weren't unscrupulous people in the league and so forth.
Hopefully they don't listen. Anyway, so our roots are in baseball.
They know who they are. And if they weren't cheating, then they know who they are too. So,
so new baseball season is here. The baseball schedule is a little different this year in that, you know, in past years, they've done an opening day Sunday kind of evening game, and then the big day has been Monday where the season starts. This year, different. Thursday, all teams are going to start on Thursday afternoon, starting right around noon, and then we'll roll through the entire day. So if you're into this kind of thing, and baseball is a way, if you're able to watch, this is a full day of being able to kind of just take in what every team is going to do. It's like with any year, we definitely have a situation of the haves and have-nots in baseball, and a lot of that's outlined just in like who teams are throwing out as our opening day pitcher, which we'll get to as we roll through this and just kind of look at like which pitchers are in good spots, what are some offenses that are in good spots. But we thought we would start if you're new to baseball, or maybe you're coming over here from NBA, to talk about to maybe just take a bird's eye view of the difference of some of the differences between baseball and really any other sport, but specifically NBA, because they are so different in terms of lineup construction. They are so different in sort of how you maybe need to attack the game. They're different in terms of like your frustration level. If you are new to baseball and you are coming over here with the idea that it's going to be translate some of your season long stuff into daily, you need to have some patience with baseball, because more than any other sport, if you're living and dying with each at bat, is going to be a frustrating kind of, you're not going to last very long in baseball.
Well, that's the basics of baseball. Basically, outside of pitcher, there's no such thing as a safe play, and even pitchers will break your heart from time to time. But there's no reason at all that the most expensive player on any given baseball slate, Mike Trout, can't go out there and 0-for-4 the first game of the season. He's going to do that multiple times throughout the year, and there's really no equivalent of LeBron scoring 0 fantasy points, right? Like, he can score 30 fantasy points and kill you, but that full-on 0, those 3 strikeouts, like, nothing really drives you crazy like investing a huge portion of your salary in a guy that just simply doesn't show up. So yeah, the emotional component to baseball is a good one. Understand that you're in it for the long game. Understand that you're probably going to play multiple slates each night just to try to find the long term sooner. And I think if you go in with that mentality, you can have a profitable baseball season. If you go in expecting that you're going to be cashing 5 out of 7 nights every single week, like, just get ready to probably find a new hobby. So if you do have the stomach for it, if you do have the steady hand, hopefully we can get you started with a few good tips just before we get started on this baseball season.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, like, you are going to want to take an aggregate approach to baseball, and we'll talk about some of the ways to do that and some of the ways to manage bankroll when it comes to baseball, and some of the things that we think are important to look at, and things that other people in the industry seem to think are important that we don't. So we'll look through the course of the baseball season, we're going to get to all this stuff, and we're not going to be able to touch on every little piece in today's podcast, because we are going to want to talk some about the opening day plays. But let's start at a pitcher real quick. When we're looking at trying to just find a pitcher to start in terms of cash games on a given slate, what are some of the things that you look at? What are some of the things that our system is really kind of keying in on in terms of where we want to land with pitcher, and understanding that price is always going to matter. Price is always going to be the ultimate determining factor, because there's a price point at which we can play just about any player for any reason. But, you know, what are some of the things that we put into our system that we found to be the most important when it comes to finding a solid pitching option in the daily sphere?
Yeah, so a pitcher is certainly the most important thing to look at, just because it's going to be where the highest percentage of your salary is going to be allocated in any given night. And by and large, pitcher in baseball is not a spot where you can go to find value outside of DraftKings pitcher two slot. You can do it on DraftKings pitcher two, but for the most part, especially for your cash game purposes, you're looking for at least a mid to high tier pitcher who's going to do two things: strike a heck of a lot of people out, or three things: go deep into games and hopefully get the win as well. And so the types of things we look at there, you know, the opportunity equivalent for pitcher in baseball, we always talk about opportunity in football, say as carries or targets. In basketball, it's the minutes that you're on the court and your overall usage. In pitchers, that's going to be innings pitched. And so some, not all pitchers are created equally. Some guys like Chris Sale can go super deep into every single game and be really effective. Other guys like Danny Salazar might be great on a per inning basis, but simply not get there in terms of getting you those 7-8 innings a game. And so I think for our starting pitchers that are going to be heading our cash game lineups, particularly on FanDuel, we're looking for a lot of innings and a lot of good things to go with it. But that's oftentimes where we're starting.
Yeah, we want the innings. We want pitchers that are really efficient. You mentioned Sale is like this. Kershaw is like this. I mean, these aren't names that are, if you're new, if you know anything about baseball, these aren't going to be new names. And then there's a sliding scale, like down the spectrum of guys who are innings eaters, guys that kind of like nibble around the plate a little too much and run their pitch counts up a little higher than you would want them. Like, yeah. Yu Darvish kind of comes to mind at times like this. Like, mm-hmm. guys, like, you know, and it's always the dreaded, oh my God, how many, if you want to see people on tilt, like have your cash game pitcher throw like 27 pitches in the first inning.
Even if he gets them all out.
Right.
Exactly. Like two strikeouts.
Yeah. Two strikeouts, but 27 pitches in that first inning. And now you're starting to sweat a little bit because, you know, as teams get smarter and smarter with pitch counts, there's just fewer and fewer teams that are willing to run their guys out at the risk of basically breaking them, especially early in the season when it's cold. Like, we have new things to kind of feel out early on in the year. Weather's going to be important. But, yeah, so we're looking for high pitch counts. We're also looking for, you know, win totals, right? The win, especially on FanDuel, is more important than it is on DraftKings. But I think Vegas lines can tell us a lot about what some of the expectation is for a pitcher on a given day. And I know people are going to say, well, Vegas gets things wrong too. No, I get that. I understand that Vegas
gets things wrong, and they're still the best that I have found in terms of figuring out on average how many runs are going to be scored, yep, in any given game. And so try your best to create models that are better than Vegas. I mean, we certainly modify off of Vegas's stuff, so we don't take it, you know, lock, stock, and barrel. But your average guy sitting at home mind is not going to be stronger than Vegas at determining these things. So that's just what I want to lay out there for sure.
And I understand that, you know, the counter to that argument, and I don't find it to be a viable one, but you know, the counter to this argument is to say, well, Vegas's goal is not to set not to say that this game is going to end 5-2 or whatever. Like, they're not trying to do that. They're trying to set a line that will bring in equal sides of money. But understand that to do that, you need to have it as close to what is going to happen in reality.
Right, because there's so many smart people putting in money betting on both sides that by and large lines are moved, especially just random middle of the season baseball games. Those lines are moved by big money weighing in and betting on either side. And precious little of that, relatively speaking, is just your random guy wandering into a Las Vegas casino.
And Vegas is excellent to this. Vegas is a good determinant of this, even with things like weather, right? Like, we've found that Vegas, we've tried for years to incorporate weather models into our model to say, like, you know, when it's blowing 15 miles out, when the wind in Wrigley is blowing 15 miles out to straight center, what does that do for run expectation? And there's lots of ways that you can configure that information. And then this is also usually built into where the lines land. Like, you know, mm-hmm. we're going to see this in Coors. And the wind is blowing out in Coors, we're going to see that number jump up or jump down. We're going to see this in places like Chase Field this year, where they're adding a humidor, right? Like, where people are now, everyone is kind of speculating at what this is going to do to overall power. Chase Field had been one of the true launching pads in MLB, and now they're going to add a humidor in there. And we already see, and we'll get into this a little bit in the first game, but we already see some of these run lines being driven down, I think, with the expectation that it's going to be harder to get out. And this is where Vegas is just good at coming as at determining sort of where some of this information lands. They're not perfect. It's not the only thing we use. We use a lot of other stuff in our model, but it is something that we do factor in. So looking at So just to roll this back into where I started, into the pitcher model, is to say, what is our win expectation when I'm a minus 160 favorite? What is my win expectation when I'm a minus 250 favorite, when it's even odds? And we're trying to look at that really on a pitcher by pitcher basis. Do you think, if for where you're standing, from your standpoint, the win, is there too much value maybe like on FanDuel put on the win? Like, is this a stat you would like to see go away, or is it still important when it comes to, because there's only so many stats we can really evaluate on a game by game basis?
Yeah, I mean, I hate the win as a stat in general. It's totally arbitrary, just made up by some guy. It's not reflective at all, really, of how much you've contributed to actually winning the game. It's not indicative of future results either. It's just kind of this arbitrary counting stat that somebody made up. So I'm no fan of it, but that doesn't mean we can ignore it. You know, it's kind of like kickers in fantasy football or something. It's like, you can hate that the kicker is there all you want, but if you don't field the kicker, you're going to lose. So you definitely have to evaluate it. I do, like, once again, there are formulas plugged into our projection system, kind of loosely based on Vegas, that will help you determine what percentage of a pitcher or a win a pitcher will get on any given basis. And just to cliff notes it for you, this is also spelled out very clearly in our ebook for MLB at dfsr.com/ebook. But the idea basically is determining how likely the team is going to win on a percentage basis based on Vegas odds, and then using how many or how often the starting pitcher gets the win, given how many innings the pitcher is going to pitch. So it's rather complicated, but certainly not impossible to do. But yeah, it's still very, very important. I mean, a win on these sites is, you know, if you can get a win where you couldn't otherwise, that can make up for, you know, the underlying skill set that couldn't produce more strikeouts or innings pitched or what have you. So yeah, the win is super important.
And the other thing that we're looking at for pitcher is, you know, how is strikeouts, right? We're trying to factor, you know, innings. The more innings you pitch, the more chances you are going to have to strike the other guys out, or just to get outs, right? Like just to record outs, because outs are
important. Yeah, you get points for innings.
Right, exactly. So pitching the innings, recording the outs, and then just strikeouts. One thing that we have baked in our model, which any really, you know, good extensive or comprehensive model is going to have, is to say, what is the strikeout expectation of the team that the pitcher is facing, especially in splits? And if you're new to baseball, you have to understand that splits, platoon splits, are enormously important when it comes to factoring in just what some of the expectation level is. You know, certain guys, like you get Paul Goldschmidt, who just, you know, completely crushes lefties. He's good up against righties too, but just completely crushes lefties. And then you're going to get guys who are extreme platoon split guys. You're going to get guys that are more down the middle, that it kind of doesn't matter what hand they are. You're going to get guys where you aren't sure because the sample size is too small. So like last year, Aaron Judge, I've got to go off the rails because I have a lot of thoughts here, but Aaron Judge, if you look at his splits from last year, he was bad against lefties. Are we really thinking that's going to continue over a course of a career for, you know, arguably the best power right-handed, he's not the best, but one of the best power right-handed bats in the game? Can we say that he's, you know, 25% worse against lefties for his career because it's a sample size issue?
That happened with Chris Bryant too. I mean, when he came up, he was having difficulty against left-handed pitching, and people had to wonder if he was going to be a reverse platoon split guy. But by and large, we know that people aren't. You know, there's odd exceptions to this, like Adam Jones or someone like that. But for the most part, hitters that are in baseball hit better against opposite-handed pitchers. You know, that's a pretty tried and true rule, where even the guys, you know, say like Altuve or Trout or somebody, they can get to sort of platoon neutral. But yeah, for the most part, you're going to be wanting to take guys in for the batting side when they're facing pitchers of opposite-handedness.
Yeah, and so when we're looking at a pitcher, we're looking at these K rates. And one thing that we use in our system is we modify our K multiplier based on the exact lineup that comes in that day. Like, we have in our system the strikeout expectation for each batter based on their platoon splits, and obviously worked into where they face that pitcher. And you're going to get, and these teams like this exist on all different parts of the spectrum too. Like, it's easy to look, I'll just use two teams that are just close alphabetically because it's going to prove my point here. But you look at the Braves. The Braves are going to be a bad team this year. Don't get me wrong. Like, they are, they're a problematic team when it comes to DFS outside of Freddie Freeman. But they also just don't really strike out that much. They don't really do anything else. They hit the ball lightly. But guys like Inciarte, Markakis, even Freeman, these guys are just not big K guys. So you're going to get reduced run expectation on a team like this, but you're not going to get out. You're probably not going to get outsized Ks. And then you get a team like Baltimore, who's got a much better offense, with the top of their lineup all the way down, but they also strike out maybe 6-7% more than average down their lineup. And trying to factor these things in, this is where baseball gets really, really granular, right? Because we can have a lower run expectation for the Braves, but how much are you going to lose in the strikeouts, right? Like, and that's going to be, it's going to matter by hand. It's going to matter who the guys are when they actually put the lineup out, right? It's going to matter how much we are able to factor in their sample size. And on a team like Baltimore, I think we have a pretty good sample size on most of these guys. So anyway, these are the things that we kind of try to put together when it comes to pitchers. I mean, we can talk about right now who we think some of the good pitchers are for this opening. Maybe we start there. Say, you know, who are some of the pitchers that we're
check
sort
those
of,
boxes.
Yeah, looking at on this opening day slate. Is there a guy, and also one more thing, the opening day in baseball is really also unlike any other day in baseball because it's the one time that every team is able to just put their best foot forward. So we're seeing the most aces that you'll ever see on a single game slate. Now, as the schedule moves out and we get different teams on different days of rest, and I know some teams have started to go, you know, more or less rest. Opening day is unlike any other day because we're just going to get almost every
ace. There's a bad clustering effect. And so, yeah, tonight, I mean, there'll be several big name pitchers who we'll see run today. Like you would see on a normal slate, Corey Kluber be a chalk play against Seattle, or Kershaw even against the Giants, even the revamped Giants with their better right-handed bats. But I think for me, the top of my list is Chris Sale. Guy was an absolute monster last season, you know, topping the charts in terms of wins above replacement, you know, K rate, innings pitched. He was just truly excellent. And the Rays just happen to be, you get a combo meal here because the Rays are not only one of the very best matchups for opposing lefties from a DFS perspective, and that they struck out at the very highest rate at a 25.4% K rate, but they also play in an underrated pitcher's park. The Tampa Bay, you know, a lot of people would be surprised to hear that Tampa Bay ranks along the lines of Petco out in Seattle, or Safeco in Seattle. Just at that time of year, buddy, where I mess up everything when it comes to baseball. But they would be surprised to hear that Tampa Bay ranked on a similar level as Seattle in terms of being a pitcher's park, but it really does. And so you take all those factors together, take the fact that the Rays even lost some of their right-handed power, and Sale just looks like an auto play for me.
Yeah, they lose Longoria in the offseason. I mean, Longoria was not the Longoria of early in his career, but
he can still hit lefties though.
Yes, yeah. They do make some other changes at the top of the order, you know, but they bring in guys like Gomez who are just going to strike out more.
Not helping the strikeout issue.
Exactly. And they're just a worse offense this year. If you just look up and down their lineup, this offense is just not, even if they are to play some of the platoon game, which they're pretty good at, they're a team that will play platoon matchups just as much as anyone else. But that only works when you have the horses in the stable.
When you hear names like Span, Duffy, Kiermaier, you know that you're just pretty much ready to go.
Right. So. When you don't have the horses to run out there, it's going to be an issue. You know, this is going to be an interesting one in terms of our model. It's very close right now between Sale and Kershaw. Our system sees Sale as having the better matchup and the better park, with Kershaw having the much better win expectation. He has by far the highest line of the day. He's coming in, I'm just going to check this rule. Yeah, he's coming in a -290 favorite, right? So now Kershaw has obviously helped by having also a very good team at his back, right? A good bullpen behind him, and also pitching in the National League, he's going to get a good park here. But also the win factor here, the fact that he's playing on one of the best teams in the majors is always going to boost, and the Red Sox are good too, so don't get me wrong, but there's two things working in Kershaw's favor here, as opposed to Sale.
Yeah.
Sale has to face Archer. Archer is an excellent pitcher that is going to reduce Sale's, forget about what the lineup is going to face, is going to reduce his win expectation because the Red Sox are going to struggle to score runs against Archer. Whereas Kershaw is getting Ty Block because they are now without Smart.
The hashtag Giants.
So the Giants are going to start the season without Bumgarner, and he doesn't have a timetable, and without Samardzija. Where do we, again, it's really close because these two factors sort of converge. The Giants lineup looks better with Longoria, McCutchen, and Posey in the middle of it, and that win expectation is just so much higher for Kershaw because of the pitcher going on the opposite side. Do you think those two factors even out? Do you think... I'm mostly just saying this because it's a virtual tie.
This is where math helps, you know? Like, this is a very difficult thing to eyeball test, and it's where I would just tend to trust our projection system. Our system does like Sale better on a points per dollar basis, even if slightly. And it's the type of thing that could change based on how lines move throughout the day. It really is that close. It also helps Kershaw, and this is another high-level thing for just your DFS as you go through the baseball season, but the fact that one of the nine guys he faces for the first six innings will be a pitcher is just a huge advantage in its own right. I mean, pitchers are so bad at hitting that getting the opportunity to face one for a guy like Kershaw is almost an automatic strikeout built into the first two times through the lineup. And, you know, he'll face pinch hitters or whatever after that, but on balance, those guys will also be worse than the opposing team's DH, you know? So, yeah, it's a better spot for Kershaw in some ways, but I think Sale, the increased strikeouts, it doesn't take, you know, with the way, and this is just a phenomenon of the scoring, the way these sites do the scoring, but like, you know, a strikeout effectively erases an earned run, right? So like, you know, if he gets, if Sale can get a couple more strikeouts, that can replace the win. Like there's a lot of ways to kind of balance these things out. I think I'll take Sale. The other thing that's sort of tough to evaluate here, we talked about innings pitch being such a big factor here. Kershaw's innings pitch were kind of weird last season in that the Dodgers just took this new organizational approach where towards the end of the year, he was just throwing six innings a game. Like you can go up and down this game log. Mm-hmm. You see one game of seven innings or more you have to go back to July from when Kershaw missed extended time due to an injury there. So given that it's early in the year and the Dodgers are gaining this reputation as an organization that treats people with kid gloves, don't be surprised if Kershaw only throws six innings.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. I think that and this is where valuing the win, and again, like the win is just one number, right? Like the innings and the strikeouts are, you can pile on those things. You can score them by order, right? Like, so you're getting more as you go.
You can accumulate more.
Exactly, right. The win, you either get it or you don't get it. And that's a problematic thing when it comes to just banking on. This is why I actually like DraftKings scoring a little better, because like the DraftKings does not put as much value on the win as FanDuel does. And so when we're kind of looking at this stuff, we just want to make sure that are we taking the safer part of two sides. Yeah, and then on DraftKings, obviously, we have two pitchers, and it's going to be nearly impossible to fit two high-salary pitchers. Now, right now, DraftKings is not even showing the evening games, doesn't look like, in their API, but you know, if we're able to look at the main slate, the 3 o'clock slate, it's going to be really pretty tough to fit one, definitely not two of these guys. Like, you can't really – there's going to be some nights where this happens where you're able to get so many low-money payoffs that you're able to – or it just makes more sense to just take your safety in – let's say it's like Sale and Kershaw and then like a bunch of bums pitching.
Well, yeah, let's talk quickly about that, because I think this is another key point about baseball that it's going to be very different for people coming over from NFL and NBA, in that baseball punts are created totally differently. There is almost no such thing. So like right now, just because it's on the top of my mind, we have Shabazz Napier filling in for Damian Lillard in the NBA tonight, right? He is just going to be an excellent play, because when he's on the court, he produces not as well as Damian Lillard, but so much better than other players in a similar price range that he'll be an auto include. And that cheap priced guy enables you to play multiple really expensive guys just with the way the salary numbers work out. In baseball, there's just no such thing as that. I mean, you'll get the guy who was batting eighth and actually is a pretty good player, but was priced at, you know, these really, really low numbers, who then moves up into the leadoff slot or something. But it's nothing like, so if Aaron Judge misses, it's not like some other guy is going to fill in and hit half as many homers as him, you know what I mean? Or like 25 homers, right? It's going to be someone who probably sucks, who's going to bat eighth or ninth. And baseball is really, really weird that way, in that there isn't as much talent kind of ready to fill in that can produce at starter levels. And so the haves are super good. The Trouts, Harpers, Stantons, Judges, those type of guys. But the have-nots are horrendous. And when they fill in for the starters, they're usually just terrible. And so that's just not really how you get value. And so for that reason, you don't see as much of like kind of the stars and scrubs phenomenon that you will see in some other sports, like with a backup running back filling in or what have you.
Yeah, and so when we're looking at this, like fitting two high-priced stud pitchers on DraftKings is going to be tough. Even fitting one at times is going to be tough. Our initial run of projections has you paying down a pitcher a little bit on DraftKings. This is not set in stone right now. One guy I don't mind here is Garrett Richards. Richards, his ERA looked really good last year. It was like sub 2.5 ERA. That is, the xFIP was more in the threes. So I don't want to go totally crazy and say that this guy's a sub 3 ERA pitcher. And I don't really evaluate things on ERA. We use more FIP and xFIP to right. determine that. But this guy's almost a K per inning. He's coming pretty cheap, all things considered, on FanDuel. Only 6,800 against an Oakland team who did not get demonstrably better in the offseason. They have guys like Chris Davis in the middle of the lineup, but there are a lot of strikeouts in the middle of that lineup. Guys like Olsen made a leap last year, but there's still a lot of Ks in the middle of that lineup. I'm mostly just looking at the $6,800 price tag and the fact that the win shares for him are going to be a little better. The Angels are slightly improved here. They got Kinsler at the top of that lineup now, along with Trout. They've made some improvements in the offseason, so they are a slightly better team. So I don't mind Richards in this spot. And then a couple of the guys that kind of stand out to me. I don't mind Nola against the aforementioned Braves, who are still pretty weak hitting. And then possibly even a guy like Danny Duffy. So these are some of the guys that I think we can consider as either starting pitcher twos. Nola is coming off a really, really strong season. Philly slightly improved, at least on the offensive side. So mostly I'm just going to say that I don't think it would be wrong to say, oh, just play Sale and Kershaw on DraftKings and you're good. I don't think you can get there.
They don't even offer a slate where you can play both those guys at the same time.
Right. So, we're going to make some other little adjustments. Let's go talk about some of the things that we look for on the offensive side of the ball, some of the things that we're trying to factor in on a day-to-day, slate-to-slate basis, and then sort of where that lands us in terms of cash games for this opening day. But where do you think, you know, if you had to value what you think are the most important pieces, by order of what do you mostly look for when it comes to trying to figure out where you're going to go on the offensive side of the ball, and then we can talk a little about stacking, and we can kind of go a couple different directions here.
Yeah, so for starters, you can just, you know, if you're trying to sort this quickly and you're not a professional at this, you don't look at this every single day, you can start by looking at Vegas totals once again. I mean, if you look at the favored team in the game with the highest total, the chances are pretty good, unless they're one of these like public teams, or maybe it's like the Rockies and Coors, or, you know, teams where the players are extremely high priced almost across the board. Then you're probably going to be able to find some reasonable amount of value. But the reason those run lines get high, and I think the thing I like to target most, is just terrible pitching. One thing that's kind of strange about baseball too, in comparison with other sports, is that there's not, so like in football, there are what, 32 different matchups you can have throughout the football season. In basketball, it's 30. In baseball, there are hundreds of different matchups you can have throughout the season based on who the opposing pitcher is. And that's going to sound intimidating at first, right? But it doesn't have to be that scary. So like on a high level, you have aces. You're almost never going to play any hitters. It doesn't matter what, you know, like Andrew McCutchen's platoon split is. You're not going to play him against some superstar left-hand. You're not going to play him against Kershaw on opening day, right? So yeah, he's better against lefties, but it doesn't really matter. So you can cross off all the guys immediately, pretty much, that are facing an ace. So on today's slate, that might be Kluber, you know, Kershaw, Sale, you know, and you can kind of get the sense there. And then you have kind of these next tier matchups, you know, so guys like, you know, Teheran or Aaron Nola, like we mentioned, you're still not hoping for that on an average slate. But again, the first day of the season, not an average slate, because you're getting every team's best pitcher ostensibly, or at least who they think is their best pitcher, looking at you, James Shields. but you're still getting some not so good matchups throughout these slates. But almost always, as the season progresses, you're going to get some guys who have like never pitched in the majors before, or you're going to get someone who's kind of just chewing up innings, who's out there and nobody can quite figure out why. It's just because pitching in baseball is so hard, and the skill cap is so high that the best pitchers are truly insane, and the worst pitchers are basically just shouldn't even be there, right? You'll get guys with a 4K per nine from the minors coming up and pitching in the majors. These types of opportunities will present themselves throughout the season. So really what we're keying in on is the opposing pitcher. And then from there are other factors that matter as well. The park, you know, who else is on the team of the guys that you're looking at, and that all plays into the total too. But that's kind of the big picture I'm looking at when it comes to pitch.
For sure, we want matchup. The other thing that I wrote some pieces about this last year, and we'll hammer this all season long, is lineup order really matters. Lineup order is, I would say, first for me is pitcher, obviously, because you're just going to get the opportunity of the guy, you know, hucking the ball your way. But then where you bat in the order, because the baseball, the only way to accumulate, this sounds so elementary, but the only way to accumulate points is by first having the ability to stand in the batter's box and swing the bat, right? And so if you bat ninth, you are going to get significantly less overall chances to hit the ball than if you bat first. And if you look really quickly, and I'll post some of these numbers, but if you look really quickly from last year and take the batting orders and the fantasy points per dollar value that you get at each fantasy spot, I'm going to say these numbers real quick, but you'll follow along. At the leadoff spot, you're getting about 1.1 fantasy points per dollar. When you go down to three, it already drops 10% to one fantasy point per dollar. And which is even more significant because most teams bat their best hitter third, right? So if you factor in that these guys are expensive and they're the best hitters, you're just almost always going to get better payoffs on a points per dollar basis by having the guy hitting leadoff, because he is getting to the plate something like 9 or 10% more. I don't have that number in front of me.
Yeah, right. Well, and in the course of the actual game itself, you're talking about like the difference between 4 and 5 at-bats or plate appearances doesn't sound like a whole lot, but that's the difference between 20 or 24 carries in a game, or like playing 28 or 35 minutes in a basketball game. I mean, we know when you take a close look at this, this matters a ton.
I do have the number actually, so I was wrong. So the average last year, the average leadoff hitter went to the plate per game 4.55 times per game. The average third hitter went there 4.35 times per game. And then by the way, it drops even farther. Like when you get down to the fifth batter in the order, it drops off even more significantly, because really that's like kind of where 4.1 plate appearances per game. So now you're fully
10%.
Full 10% by the time you hit the fifth. It really, really matters. And I know people will say, "Oh, just because he hits first doesn't mean he's a play." The leadoff hitter,
it actually does,
because actually, you know, you mentioned before about when new opportunity strikes, teams don't generally move around their third hitter in the lineup.
The third or fifth hitters.
That's going to be your Freddie Freemans. It's going to be your Miguel Cabreras. It's going to be the Anthony Rizzos. Although the Cubs are pretty good about this. But like, these are the guys that are pretty much set. The guys at the top of the lineup, a lot of teams still do subscribe to that. I need my speedy guy sort of at the top of the lineup. And if he's just like fast and he's like scrappy or whatever, these are the guys that will slot in and every or it's a
platoon matchup. And so they're replacing a lefty, so we'll just throw out this guy, Rajah exactly. Davis or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is where we get the most value. So I know people want to say like, oh, just because he hits first doesn't mean he's going to be great. Look, I can say this about anybody in baseball. Just because I have all the factors in my favor doesn't mean I'm going to be great this day. But if you look at sample size, you cannot argue with the guy at the top of the order just gets to the plate more. And if you're sitting in the dugout, you can't score points. So for me, lineup batting order really does matter. And this is where you're going to see our projections in the moment just switch. Like when the team, and now luckily for baseball, we are, this is a blessing and a curse when it comes to like monitoring a projection system, because it means a lot more time on task. But we are lucky with baseball that by and large, you get this information around 2.5 to 3 hours before the game starts, right? So you're able to start making determinations earlier. Like you're not waiting for basketball lock where it's like 6:55, dude, is he playing or not? Like that's just not generally right. Not the case. So batting order really does matter. Let's talk a little bit about stacking too, because if you're not sure, if baseball's old hat for you, then this is going to be a little repetitive. But for those that are coming in new to baseball, talk a little bit about why stacking in baseball is such a compounding effect.
Yeah, stacking in baseball is arguably more important than it is in any other DFS sport, as best I can tell. And that's because you get fantasy points for things that are directly dependent upon other people doing things for you for the most part, right? So like, so even if you hit a home run, you know, you score all of those points for yourself. You get the hit, you get the run scored, you get the RBI, you get the four bagger, you know, so you get all those points. But if there are guys who can get on base in front of you, then you get extra points. And here's the thing. So say someone hits a double in front of the guy who hits a home run, all of a sudden that guy is just going to become such a better play because now you know that he gets a run scored as well. So in basketball, yeah, there can be some synergy there, particularly when guys go to overtime, you know. So stacking in basketball certainly matters. Guys will assist the guy who scores. But for the most part, you just want the people scoring the most points, right? And in any given game in basketball, there tends to be a guy who completely goes off. Football is kind of the same way. I mean, you can stack quarterbacks and wide receivers. They're intimately linked in terms of both of them scoring together, but you rarely want to stack two wide receivers from the same team. In baseball, it's not so. I mean, if you can guess right on who's going to put together most of the runs in a high total game, say it's this 2, 4, and 5 hitter or the 3, 4, and 6 hitter or something like that, then you are going to be in an overwhelmingly positive position for both cash games and big tournaments. And so, yeah, for that reason, for big tournaments, you simply must stack in baseball. There's just no way around it. The team or the DFS player who picks the team who scores the most runs tends to just win GPPs. You're going to need to be acutely aware of that. You're just throwing money away, just jamming in a random cash lineup in a big tournament.
And our system will allow you to run stacks for teams. Like you can filter for them. You can filter to stack and double stack teams. So if you think that, we can talk about what we think a couple of the better stacks are today, but you can run a single and double stacks by locking in players that you think are going to be part of those things. So stacking is going to be something. We'll have an article that goes out each day. We have, you know, our content schedule is we podcast, but we also put out our general picks for the day, and then we also will throw out some team stacks, maybe even some offbeat ones that you can kind of take a look at that might be a little bit underowned because ownership matters as well. Talking a little bit about, we'll probably get out of here in a second, but talking a little bit about this opening day slate and teams that are in good spots. I started kind of writing up the article of today, and you mentioned them before. James Shields is making the opening day. I can't even say it without laughing. Is making the opening day start for the White Sox. I'm not sure if he's the worst all-time opening day starter for any team, because baseball has had a lot of seasons of this, and I'm sure, there are a lot of teams, so I'm sure there has to be another example. I mean, Ty Block he's also making an opening day start, so we can
not on the same league as James Shields.
So talk to me about why this is so. It's such an advantageous spot here for the Royals, facing a guy like Big Game James.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about you just want guys, bad pitchers. We didn't exactly talk about what a bad pitcher looks like, and you just need to look no further than James Shields if you'd like to find out. So here are the things James Shields does badly in some order. First of all, he walks a ton of guys. 4.08 walks per 9 is just a lot for baseball. Walks are great. Not only do you get fantasy points if the guy walks you, it also puts more guys on base in front of you. It also helps, you know, you advance if you get on first and someone walks behind you. Those things start to really add up. And the other things that Shields does very badly is keep the ball in the ballpark. I mean, this is a very basic thing, but one of the things that we know that pitchers do have some level of control over is how many home runs they give up. And that comes via how many fly balls they give up and how hard those come off the bat. And Shields ranks around the bottom of the league in every single category. XFIP is a factor or a stat used on Fangraphs in particular, where they try to measure what sort of predicted fielder independent pitching, in other words, predicting something sort of similar to ERA if you didn't account for defense. Shields has been near the bottom of the league among qualified pitchers for a number of years, and so the fact that he's going to be out there starting another game on opening day is just a miracle, really, for these purposes. So while the Royals don't tend to be a team that presents us with a lot of DFS value, on a night like tonight, it's going to be really hard to not target them.
And the reason they're so valuable in the spot is they get arguably the worst pitcher. Against Ty Block is pitching also, but because they're the Royals, so Block faces the Dodgers, and the Dodgers are going to be pretty appropriately priced because they were so good last year. They had just had so many guys that were just complete fantasy murderers that those guys are all going to be. And the same thing can be said of the Astros, which I'm going to talk about in a second. We just have pretty fair pricing in those guys because they're coming off almost to a man career seasons. That's just not the case with the Royals, and so you're getting. We don't know the lineup yet, but for the Royals, you're getting a guy like Moustakas, who's probably going to hit in the top three of the lineup. He's coming off a 30 home run year. You're getting Lucas Duda, who comes over in the offseason, and he's going to hit around the fourth or fifth hole. Again, we're making some projections about what their overall lineup's going to be. These guys are all coming really cheap. Moustakas is 3,300 on FanDuel, only 38 on DraftKings. Excellent play on both. Duda, if he hits even, and I know I mentioned fifth as being a drop-off, it'd be you can take the expectation letdown here on Duda. He's only 2,500 on FanDuel. And then even like if they hit John Jay at the top of the lineup, John Jay is a kind of a do-nothing guy, but in the way that we talked about why leadoff really matters, if he's hitting leadoff, he's the minimum on FanDuel, right? Yeah. And so now all of a sudden you're looking at three pretty cheap guys, and if you're looking to roster one of those big pitchers, this is exactly the kind of situation we're looking for.
Right on.
Cheap plays against maybe the worst pitcher in the league. Not the worst pitcher in the league. There's
the worst pitcher pitching today.
Definitely one of the worst pitchers pitching today. Any other teams kind of stand out to you as being in good spots? I mentioned the Astros possibly maybe paying up for these guys. Anything else stand out to you in terms of like either things I want to just look for in DFS, and we mentioned batting order, we mentioned pitcher, we touched on Park a little bit, or is there a team that stands out to you, or maybe a stat that stands out to you that you kind of look at?
No, I think I like the Astros. I mean, Cole Hamels is a name that people will recognize as being a good opposing pitcher, but he's really lost a step or two over the last several years.
Putting it mildly, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like a step or three. Just making a little Sandlot reference, buddy. It's the beginning of baseball season. And furthermore, the Astros just have a number of guys that can really crush left-handed pitching. I mean, Correa, he's expensive, but totally a worthwhile payoff here. You get George Springer, you get Evan Gattis. And I think the other huge factor here is early in the season, power in general is greatly depressed just because the weather is so crappy. Going out to Texas in one of the best hitters parks in an area that doesn't rate to be nearly as chilly or as humid too. That's another huge factor. Texas just gets insanely dry in the summer, but it's also much drier this time of year than I'm looking out the window here in New Jersey or in any of these other, you know, especially in northern or midwestern cities like Cincinnati, wherever else. It's going to be a much more conducive environment for power. And so, yeah, you have to pay up a little bit for the Houston bats, but I think it's worth it.
Yeah, and so if we're looking at expected run lines, if we look at just the ways that you can kind of factor it, like what expected run lines are, you can basically, there's mathematical formulas that you can take money line and over under and kind of just get a general sense of where it is. If you look right now, Kansas City has the same amount of expected runs as the Astros. Now, where does that come from? We do not think Kansas City is as good an offense as the Astros. No one would ever make that claim. So now we can start to see like, well, how much does that starting pitcher matter? I think they're both in great spots. I wrote up all the guys from the Royals basically, and basically everyone I could from the Astros as far as opening the article, because I do think that's where a lot of the value comes. But if you're looking at what, sort of like where the runs are going to fall, those two teams have some of the highest implied totals. Baltimore's got a very high one too. They're going to get Jayco to Rizzi. But there's some ballpark kind of stuff there. Like you mentioned, weather factors. I think that's a really, really important thing to look at early in the season.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that. Whole games can get canceled in baseball, in case you didn't know. And that can be a really, really problematic situation. One other little concept I want to touch on in terms of comparing two games with similar totals is you will see, especially among a lot of, well, it varies from team to team, but some teams will have a great consolidation of production among just a few guys. And the Astros sort of qualify there, where they have these sort of like super elite bats, like Springer, Altuve, Correa in particular, that are just so good on a per at bat basis that the Astros can get, you know, a very generous total afforded them in a way that the Royals wouldn't be quite so dependent, right? So they have Moustakas, sure, but like, you know, kind of up and down the lineup, they're kind of consistently just okay. And so when you see their total, it's, in my estimation, going to be more likely to be spread out across, you know, because Vegas is doing something similar to this, whether they state it or not. They're kind of projecting where the runs are going to come from, kind of building it up in a granular way. And so I still think you can, even in a game with a similar total, even a game where the guys are more expensive, it's not like, you know, Marwin Gonzalez rates to provide just as much as Correa just because the game has a, you know, they have a projected 5.5 run total or something, you know. So just want to keep that in mind too, that it's not all about just taking your run line, looking at the team and just playing as many guys as possible.
For sure, yeah. And there's just, like I said, more than any other sport, baseball has more factors than you really ever consider for any other sport, at least the popular ones, right? There's like the golf and stuff like that where you're gonna try to figure out all these. There are other sports that have a lot of factors, but
baseball can't be eyeball tested. Exactly. You cannot go in. You can't, like, even in basketball this time of year, you can kind of eyeball test it. You can look at game logs. You know, game logs are actually quite useful in basketball and football to determine both opportunity and you know, kind of how many passes they're getting over the course of the game. Baseball is just not so. You're going to get your 4 to 5 at-bats depending on where you are in the lineup. And then there's pitcher, there's park, there's weather. Then there's all these factors that the human beings just can't tell just by looking at. So you got to have some set kind of database, whether you use our tools at dfsr.com/MLB, whether you construct your own, whether you just use somebody else's out there on the internet, plenty of decent tools out there. You got to do something. You can't just simply walk up and be like, who are my good plays tonight? It doesn't work.
Yep. And last thing I'm going to say is this before we get out of here. And other podcasts down the line, we're going to spend more time on like who the actual plays are. There's just a lot to break down for the early season in baseball. But baseball, more than any other sport, will challenge your emotional/analytic mind in a way that other sports don't. Like baseball will at times convince you that your assumption about something was correct when it was there was luck or there was just not a chance of it to happen anyway. So like I know that's a confusing thing that I'm trying to say, but just because you rostered Bryce Harper and he went 0 for 4 doesn't mean that Bryce Harper was a bad play that day, right? And it doesn't mean because he went 0 for 4 yesterday or because he's 0 for his last 20 that he's still a bad play unless you think something is wrong. Baseball is a long season like this and you have to take things in the aggregate and it will challenge you to make you think that like, oh, this thing is incorrect because it hasn't happened when I've rostered the guy or it hasn't happened for the guy in a very, very small sample size. You really need to take a steady hand with baseball more than any other sport because, again, by and large, the best players in baseball just don't do anything 60% of the time.
Right? Yeah, right on. And I mean, furthermore, I think trying to go deeper and figure out, you need reasons for changes in performance in baseball, I think more so than any other sport, or reasons to trust that, you know, something really different is going to happen. And so like on the pitcher tip, it might be this guy's added a new pitch. He's taken away a pitch. He's changed teams. He's pitching in a different park more frequently now, giving up more fly balls or more ground balls or whatever, right? But you need some fundamental difference. And batters are the same way. I mean, we sat there in our chat room for the whole 2016 season talking about how Bryce Harper looked like a fundamentally similar player. His walk and K rate were very similar, 17 and 18. The isolated power had been down a little bit, but other than that, he looked like pretty much the same play. And we just got hate upon hate upon hate for recommending this play. Comes back the next year and is the same exact player he had always been. The thing about baseball is sometimes the long run lasts more than a whole season. And that is a real mind screw for you because Basketball just doesn't work that way. Like LaMarcus Aldridge, go look at his points per minute stats from 5 years ago. They're basically the same as they are now. Baseball, not so much. Like you can get whole seasons. Like the batting leader, the guy who wins the batting title every year, was just the luckiest good hitter. Like that's pretty much how that works. He's like the guy who was already super good, but his, you know, he had more seeing eye singles and line drives that landed on the ground.
I'm looking at Harper because you have it up here. Harper had an 90 point difference in his BABIP from season over season, right?
And it's sandwiched between two seasons of identical 360-ish batting average on balls in play.
Right.
Then he goes down to 260. Was that because he was bad that year or because there was just something didn't work out quite in his favor, you know? And it can really play on your confirmation bias too, because once you start expecting a guy to be bad and then he's bad again, then you just reinforce that narrative. And since
he will be bad more than he's good
most nights. Most players will be bad on most nights, and even the superstars, that will hold true for them, maybe 50-50, you know. There are some consistent guys out there, these unicorns like Jose Altuve or Albert Pujols in his prime or whatever, but Yeah, for the most part, consistency is a black swan when it comes to baseball. So, hey, best of luck, though, by the way.
Hey, we're here in baseball. I'm excited. It's always exciting at the beginning of the year especially when we're testing out new things and our projections. Yeah. Yep. All right, dfsr.com/MLB gets you that free 3-day trial. Go check that out. We'll be back again Friday talking baseball. We'll spend a little bit more time on the individual plays on that day. In the meantime, if you go sign up, we have a members-only chat where one of us will be in there. I'll be in there all day tomorrow talking baseball with everybody. So if you want to sign up now, I'll be in there just discussing baseball, watching baseball, just kind of working our system and kind of making sure everything is correct on opening day. So go check that out. dfsr.com/MLB will get you started. Buddy, talk to you again baseball on Friday.
Later.